Right, viewers and listeners, hello. Another movie review from 1188. Welcome, thanks for joining us. Thanks to the new subscribers, that's going quite well. So tonight, we're going to be talking about a movie that Samir picked. And speaking of Samir...
Hey! Hello. Hi, guys. Good evening.
You all right?
Yeah, good, thanks.
And we also have with us third member of the crew, Justin.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are one no. this evening? Tally-ho! Tally-ho!
Yes.
Better get 6 o'clock, I understand.
Yeah.
So, by that stupid affected accent, it means that we are reviewing an English classic, Battle of Britain, 1969 movie. Guess who picked it?
Fucking Samir, innit? Living in the past.
Yep, just can't. Era that you didn't even know. You don't have a bloody clue.
Yeah, it's my favourite era, though. I don't know why.
I weren't alive, but I'm not sure how. But
60s.
Historically, perhaps, maybe.
Yeah, historically, I wasn't around, mate. I was too busy travelling the space.
Well, I tell you what, right? I'm actually starting to pine for eras that I actually wasn't part of. I started like watching old clips of 1950s London and stuff, and you think, God, I wish...
Don't say it.
Exactly. Yeah. How can you pine for an era you was never part of? But everything looks so much more simpler then and so much more laid back.
I do agree with you. I mean, a bit like that with the 80s here, but it's more the 50s to the 70s in the US.
I think you were around in the 80s, but you were a little bit too young to remember them.
But, well,
Parts of it, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, 1 to 10 in the 80s, but it was a simpler time because it wasn't corrupted by fucking social media.
Well, that's true, yeah. But in general, corruption-wise, I think there was shitloads of it. They could get away with more of it. You just didn't hear or know about it because there wasn't social media.
Actually, it's probably a good place to start with this film, actually, because, of course, you know, propaganda played quite heavy in Second World War, but we probably will get to that.
Yes, that's... Okay, so, 1969, Battle of Britain, Samir's pick. I will admit, I've never seen this film before.
Well...
No way.
Hold the bus.
Does that mean I get my passport revoked?
Yeah.
No.
Have you never seen like 633 Squadron or the Dam Busters either?
No, I don't think I have.
I watched the 63 Squadron this afternoon, funny enough.
633, yeah.
Yeah.
A Bridge Too Far?
Seen that.
Crikey.
You know what? I see, in my defense, I seem to remember these films being on the TV when I was younger, but
yeah,
it was kind of a period where. It was like TV of the 80s, and you had the 80s movies, which were much more interesting and much, you know, more effects and stuff and more mainstream actors and whatnot. So it was just
these were mainstream actors. What are you talking about?
Yeah, back in the 60s and the 70s, but I didn't have a fucking clue.
I know exactly what Paul means, yeah.
Yeah, it just wasn't current zeitgeist, was it? You know, when I was growing up, it was all about Dan Aykroyd, Bill Murray, and Ghostbusters and shit.
Something strange.
About Laurence Olivier. I didn't even fucking know how to pronounce his last name. So,
Laurence Olivier, darling. Laurence
Olivier. Yes.
Olivier. Because everybody spoke like that back in that era.
These films were on in the background as a kid, and it was just boring. You know, it was just kind of, boring.
Oh, my granddad was part of that. Oh, I find it boring here.
Yeah, my granddad wasn't, though.
No, I'm just giving an example.
No, he had it way on his toes. He never went. He went AWOL.
All right.
No, he didn't. He was too young.
Looking for him.
National service. He got called up, spent most of his time out in Kenya and also locked up in a glass house. Kept on eating people.
Oh, dear.
Lovely.
Glass houses, a lot of that now these days. So social media people locked up in glass houses, isn't they?
Bloody, I don't know what social media
is. Yeah, we should talk about this bloody film, didn't you?
Yeah, it's coming. Let's talk about it. You're going in.
Right, I need to do a synopsis.
Before we start, like it's like Justin, that's the way guys speak these days.
A little bit roady.
Roady, you know what I mean? Like a geezer.
No one talks like that anymore. That's gone. It's all roadman speak, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've got that, yeah. Don't start that.
Anyway.
Claim...
Right. Battle of Britain is the only reason we're here. So, yep. In 1940, the British Royal Air Force fights a desperate battle to prevent the Luftwaffe from gaining air superiority over the English Channel as a prelude to a possible Axis invasion of the UK. That had one comma in it. So, I have to get my breath back. Right. Let's do the cast. Let me just present my screen. Share my tab, my IMDb tab. Right, okay. So, Michael Caine, why is he even mentioned? He was in this film about 5 minutes.
Then he got shot down.
Okay.
Yeah. Actually, he disappeared, actually.
I thought he disappeared. I didn't think he got shot down.
The guy came back, didn't he, and said the CEO's gone as well. They just pounced on us. They just came out of nowhere.
Right. Okay. And that explains it, because earlier today, I put in our YouTube community section an image of Michael Caine saying, "Where did Michael Caine disappear to? Answers on a postcard, please." Because I didn't realise he got shut down. Shows how much attention I was paying, doesn't it? Trevor Howard, Air Vice Marshal Keith Park.
Legendary.
Yeah, I know where you're going with this. And I believe that a lot of these names are real people of the time.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
So, Harry Andrews, senior civil servant. Okay, that was a real person, a senior civil servant. Kurt Jurgens plays Baron von Richter. That's Kurt Jurgens.
Great actor, Kurt Jurgens. He was a Bond guy, Bond villain.
He was, yeah. Can't remember which one, though.
Spy Who Loved Me.
Yeah, he owned that big sort of like thing that came underwater, out of water. Yeah.
Underwater City or whatever it was.
Yeah. That's right, yeah. What one was that? That was For Your Eyes Only.
Yeah. Spy Who Loved Me.
Spy Who Loved Me. Was that a Roger Moore one?
Yeah, it was Roger Moore. It was Roger Moore.
Probably why I didn't give a shit then.
Yeah.
Ian McShane, but Sergeant Pilot Andy.
Yep.
Didn't Ian McShane look really young?
Yes, he did. Yeah.
I've only ever seen him in like middle aged. So to see him so young was like, wow, he actually did look young once in his life.
Yes.
Laurence Olivier, Air Chief Marshal Sir Hugh. That's been truncated, that text.
Downing. It was Downing.
There it is. Laurence Olivier, Air Chief Marshal Sir Hugh Downing. Yeah. Dowding. Not Downing, Dowding.
Dowding, okay.
Christopher Plummer, Squadron Leader Colin Harvey, is probably worth a mention. Robert Shaw, worth a mention. Squadron Leader Skipper. Ralph Richardson.
The British Minister, it was actually Ambassador, but they made him Minister there, but okay.
I can't think of anyone else.
Susan York. Really worth. Susan York.
Right.
She was in it.
Susanna York, section officer Maggie Harvey.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well.
I just wanted to mention something. There's a few people that weren't mentioned. There were actually British film royalty and legends at the time, like Trevor Howard, Olivier, and a few others. So I just wanted to say that was A-star, A-list cast for the time.
You know what? My overriding thoughts on all of this was that this film, there wasn't really any characters in this film. It's about the historical. It might as well have been a documentary. They might as well have done it. You know, like the modern style documentaries, almost done like TV shows and films now.
Yes.
Where they have actors playing the parts. It's pretty much one of those, really, because I didn't feel any connection to any of the characters in this film. I didn't feel like I knew any of them. Mm-hmm. In fact, it was mostly just complete confusion. I mean, what was the married couple thing all about?
So, yeah.
Well, other than being really bullish
and hating each other because they didn't work next to each other. That's it, really. There wasn't really much in there. It was just a story that was meant to be in the background somewhere, something's happening in their personal life because of the war. that's it, really.
Yeah, you might as well just not have bothered. Just don't, no. Just not bother. I mean, it offered nothing, really.
I think we forgot something in the past. We haven't said who are the German exes, if we want to go through those.
Well, if you know them off the top of your head, because they weren't listed.
Weren't they? Oh, okay.
No. Well, there's okay. One, Kurt Jurgens, but the guy who played Hermann Göring, he wasn't, none of them are listed.
So all I know about that guy, he was a country singer, German country singer, and a TV star in Germany in the 60s and 70s, and he died of a heart failure attack or something like that. That's all I know about him. I don't know his name. Unfortunately, I forgot his name, his real name.
Well, that's fucking helpful, isn't it?
Brilliant. Right, okay. So that's the German cast covered then.
Right. Well, be honest, would you remember any German names?
Well, I might have done. But then if they were listed on the IMDb page, I would have read them out.
Okay.
So, obviously IMDb don't care.
No. Dead to losing side. Who cares about them?
Yes. Okay. Well, does they don't actually have any points because I seem to be
we're still in the cast.
No.
Oh,
it's done.
What I found interesting is how they actually used real aircrafts, and it was the Spanish Air Force that helped them with quite a lot of the aircrafts. For example, the German fighter planes. The only difference was the engine was slightly different. They used Spanish engines, so the belly was a little bit protruded. I can't even say it coming out underneath at the bottom because of the way the engine was actually fitted into the actual fighter.
Talking about the 109s. The German fighter.
Yeah, the 109s. And also they had 30 of the actual bombers as well going out of service or something.
There was a lot of repetitive scenes. I mean, there's a huge amount of repetitive scenes with the planes. Because, of course, at the beginning, they're not even Spitfires, they're Hurricanes. Because really, many will argue that it was the Hurricanes that won the Battle of Britain, not the Spitfire.
But I'm just telling you what the history I found out where they got bloody planes from, mate. I'm not saying that they had 1,000 planes that are flying over London, am I? Yeah.
Let me find it. I actually made a post about this, about the hurricane and all that stuff earlier. And
but if you're in a room with people who really like understand it, but like, wasn't the Spitfires that won the Battle of Britain? It was the Hurricanes.
Yeah.
Because they weren't as fast, but they were much more robust.
Can you see this post?
Yeah.
So made just 3 hours ago. I made a poll. So we've had 8 votes, and I said, "What was best, Spitfire or Hawker Hurricane?" In our community section, 88% of people voted for Spitfire.
Because that's what we're brought up to be told to believe.
Indeed. Yes.
Yep. And someone also made a comment there.
Oh, it's some guy called Sammy Coca-Kepcha. The Spitfire was the support plane for the Hurricane. I did not know until a few years ago, but the Spitfire became more famous. Yeah, I think it just had better marketing, didn't it?
Yeah, it did.
Yeah. Better marketing.
The only difference between the two of them, if I remember rightly, was that they were both Merlin V12s, but the Spitfire was supercharged, whereas the Hurricane wasn't. Hence why the Spitfire was slightly faster, and also which is why it could incline quicker and dive faster because it had the supercharger attached to it.
You're right. The other thing was that they couldn't produce the Spitfires as fast as a Hurricane or something called that.
It was a similar construction.
Yeah.
And the reason a Hurricane was produced more is because it was also put in a 2-seater version for training.
Interesting.
Facts coming at you.
Well, something I remember from being told a long, 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 long time ago.
Yeah.
Which is why I think in this film the Hurricanes feature more heavily at the beginning as a little sort of maybe, swan song to it. But
so So the hurricanes were actually portrayed in this film, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Quite a lot, actually. Spider controllers, you'll be joining an organization which... Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
No, that's all right. I was just... this was, if you just go back a bit...
Yeah, let me just take that out of the stream, because this is a new thing for the people that are watching and listening to this. This is something else that we want to try and make this a bit more engaging for you guys watching and listening. So what we've done is we've got a couple of clips out of the movie, and what we'll do is, you know, we'll just interject them from time to time so that you can watch. And I've literally just clipped this because Justin sent me a timestamp of the movie. So if I play it, we'll watch. Well,
before you play it, basically, you've got to look for the celebrity cameo. Yeah.
Yes, I know exactly what.
Yeah.
I know exactly what you're going to say, because like about a couple of minutes ago, you probably saw me laughing. That's because I was just clipping this as we were talking. Let's watch it.
Spider controllers, you'll be joining an organization which, thank the good Lord, was not rushed up hastily yesterday. It'll be a pain in the neck to the enemy when he comes. We'll get up our sleeves. Now, the RDF chain shows us where they are. The information is passed to group. Group scrambles the necessary squadrons. And you, at sector level, guide our chaps.
It's a bit of a close-up coming.
It's been tried and tested.
I think I know exactly where you're going with this.
So don't blame the system if you're no good. Now, clearly 11 group here will bear the...
You see it, Smith.
I know who you're talking about.
You know who we're talking about, but it isn't.
Well, I'm not going to laugh because he was a Second World War hero.
Here we go. So it's just panning in. There we go. Yep. No, that's that angle of him is not so
funny. No, it's not that. No, that bit isn't. But that first section there is like, what's Joe Biden doing in
Exactly. Why the fuck is Joe Biden in this movie? Yeah. Can you see we've got the same fucking expression, sort of glazed dementia look?
Well,
the reason why they put him in there was he volunteered to be in there. Joe Biden, yeah, because he was actually a Second World War Spitfire hero, and he fought for the Royal Air Force. And basically the reason was to show people the effects of flying in the Second World War, because people didn't really appreciate it. And he was one of the aces who got shot down and got burnt. And that's why they were showing him from different angles, showing how the plastic surgery and stuff was done at the time. And obviously it wasn't like modern times where they could make it that perfect. So that's why it looks like Joe Biden, who's actually time traveler, as you can see from this movie.
So actually saying that Joe Biden looks like a Burns victim.
It seems like it, according to...
Anyway, yeah. I didn't spot that first time around. I mean, I'm not laughing at the guy that's disfigured in any way. Certainly not. But
just laughing at Joe Biden.
That wide angle. It really does look like Joe Biden sat there in the room. Yeah, amazing.
It is funny.
Can you imagine if that was Joe?
Whoa!
Can you imagine if that was Joe Biden? How many times you would have to explain to him what we were actually trying to achieve there?
Well, I don't know. He's on the wrong side though for this film, isn't he?
He'd probably have a cue card anyway, wouldn't he? Yeah. Regardless of what side he's on, he would have a cue card telling him to sit down, stand up, go for a piss, say yes, say no. Oh, political.
I tell you, what I find interesting about this film, obviously we're British, we're English, so of course we're all about, we understand the war, we won the war and all the rest of it. And of course we understand the great loss of that caused. But what I found interesting about this film as well is that although the version I watched didn't have the subtitles, I have watched this film many, many times. And of course, the British press will claim one thing and then you get a clip to Germany. And of course, it tells, something completely different, which is otherwise known as propaganda. We know this.
It all the time.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. It's still rife even now. I mean, we moan about social media, but, propaganda hasn't changed in any way. Like, one person says something, another says another, and you don't know who to necessarily believe, do you?
The truth is always somewhere in the middle.
Well, absolutely, yeah. But I think what one thing is true about this, and obviously knowing a bit about World War II, I know, Paul, you and I share that sort of interest, is that, he did, stop bombing the airfields. And if he hadn't stopped bombing the airfields, the chances are he would have turned the war.
Yeah, we want to
see. Who are you talking about? He?
Hitler.
Who's he?
Because he was so you know, such a megalomaniac that it was like, no, I'm going to take out London. I've done the job now. And...
Well, those two mistakes he made, really, didn't he?
Yeah, but I mean, that was retaliation, wasn't it? As is depicted in this film, it's pure retaliation.
Right.
Because they dropped a load of bombs on Berlin, and it's like, right, that's fucked up. I'm not having that. Let's obliterate London.
Well, yeah, and actually, to tell you, of course, that scene out of which you see quite a lot, obviously, in historical television, it still takes me back to Star Wars. You know, where he's at the front there, and all the crowds and everyone. I can't even now watching Andor with the flared trousers. I mean, it's just so Germanic. You know,
that was the whole point. Star Wars was a retelling of the Second World War, essentially.
Well.
I have to say one thing. Both sides, the Air Force's, the uniforms were just amazing. They looked great. I say?
German uniforms were spectacular. I mean, they were elaborate. They were detailed. And you knew who was who. I think that's always been a slight confusing thing over here, is that the uniform sometimes doesn't make it clear who you are and what you do. But German uniforms, I don't know what it is. Just you see someone in German... You know roughly whether they're just a simple soldier or, you know, Gestapo or SS or don't you?
But the Air Force had a different colour. They had a lightish blue, greyish colour, while the German Army had a green, greyish colour uniform as well. I think that was a difference. And the leather jacket,
I think it's fair to say that best dressed army ever, so you know, so far in world history. I think the Romans back in the day were pretty well dressed. I
mean, definitely. They didn't have Hugo Boss then, did they?
No, Hugo wasn't around. He wasn't available.
Yeah, but from a purely tactical sense, Roman army was just fantastically dressed. But yeah, the German army in the 40s, definitely up there.
Yeah.
Top five best dressed armies. Next YouTube video.
Yeah.
Well, because of that, a Hugo Boss was actually kicked out of his own company. He was never ever allowed to run Hugo Boss again after the war because he dressed a Nazi party and the forces.
I think it might be different if they'd won, maybe. But yeah.
Well, I think if they had won, then they would be probably ruling us. We would be speaking German now, not English in Britain, probably.
Oh, I don't. I mean, the thing is, actually, the interesting thing at the beginning of this film is like they sort of give the impression they're not even that bothered about Britain, really.
Well, they apparently never were. Hitler didn't want to come to war. You know, do you remember Rudolf Hess? Rudolf Hess that was sent over in a plane that landed over in Scotland.
Yes. Yeah.
And there's a lot of rumors and a lot of paperwork that backs up the fact that he was there to organise some kind of treaty, some kind of collaboration between us and Germans. Because they didn't want to fight us. They saw us as natural allies. Yeah.
Don't forget, because it was the connection of the royal family and stuff like that. So it was his cousin. Yeah. That's what he said as well. The only thing he did sort of admire about Britain was actually the empire. And what he said, you keep the empire and I have Europe. Because... That was the deal he wanted to come out with, but obviously we said nope. We're not going to let you have Europe.
I did love that bit in the film. I mean, that was almost sort of really, you know, obviously now that we know about history, and it was a really heartwarming part, wasn't it? You know, sort of saying, you know, and even then we still won't listen. You know, when you're marching up, it's like that British defiance. It's like fuck off. You know, it's not going to happen.
The two ministers talking together. Yes. It's in Switzerland as well, isn't it? So, the German, one of the German ambassadors goes to an English minister and basically says the Führer doesn't want to go to war with you. So he's his natural allies and stuff. So tries to make a deal. Yeah. And that guy says, you know, you could be marching up Whitehall and we'd still say no.
Yeah.
Well, I think if that was the case, I don't think we would have a choice to say no, would we, or yes or no to them if they were marching up Whitehall, really. I mean, the fact is, the mistake he made was he went for the Soviet Union at the same time, and that really cost him the war.
Didn't have a choice, unfortunately. No, he didn't have a choice because the Russians were starting to
get a little bit suspicious.
On the, Well, yeah, and they were starting to renege on the deal.
I think a few boats coming across the channel from piddly little Britain is nowhere near much of a worry, as half of Europe being bordered by, you know, the biggest military force known to man at the time. Yeah,
sheer numbers, isn't it, in Russia? As we know, they were just sending. And I always think of that, you know, was it Stalingrad or one of the last rolls of the dice for the Russian army, where they were sending men out, one with a rifle, one with ammunition.
Yeah.
So one dropped, they'd pick up the rifle and keep moving forward. And if they didn't, they turned back, then they'd be shot by commanding officers. Fucking hell.
Well, wasn't it also a case where the commanding officers were actually shot themselves, were asked to commit suicide if they didn't...
Yeah, if they failed, that was it.
Yeah.
Given the gun, do the honourable thing.
Yeah.
So it was... Yeah, brutal. We just had no choice if you're in the Russians. Yeah, the Russians are fucking brutal at that point as well. And of course, you know, I was thinking about the Polish in this movie. I'm glad that they were portrayed, actually, because you think about those poor bastards... Part. Yeah, when you think about those poor bastards in Poland, they were invaded by the Germans, completely ravaged.
Yeah.
And then on the way out, they were completely ravaged by the bloody Russians as well. Yeah.
Worse,
completely decimated.
Yeah.
So, well, there was a deal, wasn't it? I forgot the deal between Hitler and Stalin. There was a name for it, which they said you can have part of Poland or something to the Soviets. And they did some dirty work for the Germans without them realizing they were doing it for the Germans. And in the end, well, when the war came down and stuff like that, loads of history has come out with mass graves of officers, Polish officers and army people. I forgot the name of the forest, but...
Black Forest, I think you're talking about.
Sounds familiar.
Isn't that why it's called the Black Forest?
No, that is in... No, that's not the Black Forest.
Black Forest has always been called the Black Forest. We get Black Forest Ghetto and that stuff.
Yeah, that's right, I don't think they would call Black Forest Ghetto if it was a place where people got murdered or...
well, it could have been tribute.
This was in Poland.
Anyway,
maybe.
I have a clip about that Polish stuff, actually, which I'm going to play.
Finally, and God alone knows why, I've received the following signal. Congratulations, as of today, this squadron is operational. Signed, Keith Park, Air Vice Marshal, AOC 11 Group.
Yeah, they understood that, though. Did you hear the guy translate that? Yeah.
Yeah.
They understood that bit perfectly well.
Yeah. Well, they understood a lot of it. That was the whole part. You know, when they're in the planes and they're all going, repeat, sir, repeat.
Yeah,
repeat.
Yeah. They know.
And they were flying off. Yeah, they knew exactly. And they just wanted to fucking have a go at Jerry, didn't they?
Yeah.
And I quite like that section. Yeah. The whole section in the film, actually, of the Polish pilots there. Because, they're all playing a bit dumb. It was quite funny when one of them bailed out of their plane after being shot down. And they ended up in that field. And those farmers just walked straight up to him
good afternoon, my arse.
Yeah, good afternoon, my arse, you bosh bastard. Come on, put your hands up.
I love that.
Yeah, he thought, obviously, he made a mistake. He should have unzipped his finger and shown his uniform. Obviously, therefore, it was German. So that was the funniest.
Good afternoon.
Yeah.
So polite, yeah.
But
good afternoon, my arse.
It's like I remember having a teacher called Popovich, and obviously I didn't know understand it at the time. This was when I was a little kid, but then I realised she had a Polish sort of heritage, and obviously her parents probably fought or grandfather fought in the Second World War, whatever the case is. It was amazing how many different people from different parts of the world actually fought for us.
Well, I was just looking at the numbers, actually, end of the film. It was 141 Polish pilots. It was the second highest number of Allied pilots.
I have that as a clip as well. Shall I play it?
Yeah, yeah.
Before we play it, there is one part. I did a little bit more research, and I'm not being woke, as I said to Paul before. Actually, there were four Sikhs who actually fought in the Battle of Britain, which have not been included. So there were some Commonwealth...
It's racist, man.
Let's play the clip. Okay, so fleet generals. So we've got 21 Australians, 73 New Zealanders, 88 Canadians, 21 South Africans, 2 Southern Rhodesians, 8 Irish, 7 American, 141 Polish, 86 Czech, 26 Belgian, 13 Free French, one Israeli, and apparently four Sikhs.
Apparently four Sikhs.
Yeah.
And there's another thing. Israel wasn't created until 1948, so that was meant to be Palestine. But because they might get insulted, they called it Israel.
God
damn. Well, I'm insulted, you racist. Right.
So, moving on.
Does anyone want to take a stab at what that car was that that officer was driving?
What, the green one?
Yeah.
It looked like a minor sort of thing.
Well, I have a clip of that too, just to jog your memory. Perhaps
it was an Austin, maybe a Morgan or some an Austin something.
Let's play. Let's go.
Cool,
I just like the suspension on it. Look at the suspension. Looks like driving a waterbed. So what is that?
Looks like an Austin something.
Yeah, it does. It looks like Austin or Morgan or something like that.
Well, you've got to think of the era as well. It's definitely not a Ford. I'm pretty sure that's not a Ford.
No, I don't think Ford could make beautiful cars like that at the time.
Well, I like it anyway. I thought it was quite a nice little motor, that.
Yeah, what about the German car?
Well, they're all Mercedes. But
did you notice it didn't have a Mercedes badge on top? Because all the Mercedes used to have badges, like all Hitler's cars and everything. If you look at historic documentaries.
Oh, it's an MG. It's an MGPA Midget.
Oh, nice. The Chinese own MG now. Just
to know. And it's still in existence.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
What, the one?
1934 MGPA Midget 4-seat Tourer.
That's Justin's next car.
Yeah, but I agree with you. It is a cool-looking car.
There it is. It's a shame all the cars look the same nowadays. I mean, all the manufacturers virtually have the same sort of bodywork, and, yeah, shame about that.
Mm. But the German car is pretty spectacular. I mean, the limos that Hitler used to go around, the big 7-litre Mercedes-Benz. I remember watching a programme where a guy, I think it was Combat Dealers, and I watched
him. Yeah, me and the boys are getting on.
Brucey and Combat Dealers. And he goes abroad and he goes in the barn and he sees one of these things. And the guy says, well, I can't, you know, claim too much to it. But apparently this was one of the big 7-litre Mercedes that Hitler used. And it was fucking huge.
Yeah.
Huge.
And they were the first armour-plated
There were seven
cars.
Of them he had, apparently. So about seven or eight of them made. And you're right, they were armour-plated and supercharged as well. So they were pretty fierce.
Yes, they were, yeah. And Hermann Göring had a blue one, his personal one, which was blue.
Did that matching bra and suspenders, did it?
Well, it was a bit of a gay, it was a bit of a baby blue, you know, uniform he wore, didn't it? And I'll tell you something as well, actually. I was down in Deal a couple of weeks ago, or about a month ago or so, and you have to go through Dover to get to Deal because you have to do like this funny loop up through the cliff. And on the way back, unbelievably,
it's all Göring.
It was clear you could see right across the front because obviously it's the shortest gap, as we all know, from Dover to Calais. Mm-hmm. And it was like looking from Gosport over to Isle of Wight. It's like that. It felt like it was that close. And I thought at that moment, I thought, God, blimey! You know, just think, once upon a time, Hitler was like there with his binoculars, you know, looking over at us. And I thought at that very moment, I thought you could almost today see somebody doing that.
Well, Napoleon did it 100 years before.
Well, indeed. But it just reminds you actually how close we are at that point. Anyway, we actually are.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you can easily traverse that ocean with a rubber dinghy.
Well, you think, but of course the currents are very strong there because it pushes. That's one of the problems. The currents get quite strong around that area.
Well, apparently not. Apparently, it's quite easy to do it in a rubber dinghy.
Well, true. I think they'd be a bit more sophisticated.
Oh, it's amazing! Hitler had all this technology and he couldn't do it, but he can do it with a rubber dinghy.
Yeah, Hitler. I mean, what a dick! He could have invaded England, just sent all these troops over on rubber dinghies.
Yeah,
and it would have completely obliterated us.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, but of course the shoreline's quite difficult. That's the thing. You have to pick your point. over here.
Well, I'm not looking. Well,
you think, it's really not difficult. It's been proven quite a lot recently. It's been proven quite a lot. It's really easy.
But I mean, from mass though, because they're doing it like covert and, you know, sort of secretly, you know. But if you want to bring an army over, you can't. That's why we kind of chose.
In broad daylight. No, you can do it in broad daylight. You can just hit the beach and just scatter, and you can just completely disappear into the country.
Yeah.
But don't forget,
you can do it in broad daylight. It doesn't matter.
It probably would have had hundreds of U-boats come towards it, and then
don't need them. Rowing boats, rubber dinghies, complete invasion.
Do you want to try it one day then?
Yeah, just do it the other way. We'll go to Calais.
Okay, but make sure we have
next
our
YouTube video. 11:08 goes to Calais in a rubber dinghy. We'll see how easy it is to get to France.
Do you reckon they'll let us in though? Do you reckon we turn up and go, "Oh, good afternoon, chaps. Just thought we'd try it, you know, see how we get
on." No, they'll mow us down with machine gun fire. That's what the French would do.
Well, actually, Jeremy Clarkson did it in Top Gear, didn't they, with their motorised cars. Went across the channel from Dover, didn't they? Landed at Calais.
Vaguely remember that. Mm.
Didn't he almost sink halfway when he got there? Remember that one.
But these people swim it as well, though, don't they? There were these like sea swimmers. They do actually swim backwards and forwards.
I don't think you can send an army by swimming, but rubber dinghies, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Anyway, moving on from the rubber dinghies.
It's back to Britain, not back to the Atlantic. Yeah.
Yeah. I quite liked the fact that you got a German perspective in this. You saw both sides fairly well represented. And it was quite nice that they retained the German language in this. They didn't dub it over, or they didn't force a load of English actors to put on fake German accents like it was an episode of Hello, Hello, which was pretty good.
Just pissing by.
When I heard a shit. Yeah. it's ridiculous. But no, I quite like that. There's a number of war films that I quite like. One is called Stalingrad, which is an early 90s movie. Which is about the Germans and just the absolute, you know, the way it was so brutal in Stalingrad and stuff. And that's all German with English subtitles and stuff. And it adds to the authenticity of it all. So I quite like that. For a movie done in 1969, it would have been very easy, I think, to get a bunch of English actors or whatever actors to just affect a German accent and get on with it.
Mm. Yeah. And not only that, it's also I'm really happy they did get actual German actors, because don't forget the wound was still open, and there were people.
Yeah.
And people weren't too happy maybe to have Germans come into Britain or whatever. You could have the thing is, I said you could have used Swiss actors or Austrian actors of German descent, but I think they were a little bit angry with the Austrians as well, weren't they? Some of the veterans.
The Austrians are more dedicated to the cause than the Germans were.
Yeah, I wonder why. I think it was their uncle, wasn't it, who was leading the Germans astray, wasn't it?
The Austrian is a fascinating country, Austria. And
yes.
Anyway. Oh.
Never been.
Yeah, I've been there twice and very interesting.
I recommend it. It's lovely. I mean, like their houses are fucking phenomenal.
Yeah,
I went to Schladming a couple of years ago.
Bless you.
And I was patient zero for COVID. I'm pretty sure of it and all in January 2019. But anyway, beautiful. Their houses are just phenomenal. Absolutely fucking massive. And they've got so much space around them and so much land. You know, like here and most other countries, everything's just densely packed into grid-like rectangular formations.
So why do people come here then? Why don't they go? If there's so much space elsewhere, why don't people migrate there?
If I was here, I wouldn't want to answer that question.
What is it about us that is so appealing?
No comment at the moment.
Is it because we say hello rather than off?
No, I think to summarise, I think we have the biggest welfare system in the entirety of Europe. I think that's why.
And not only that, Austria is quite right wing even to this day.
They appreciate their culture and want to keep hold of it.
Yeah,
and
I'm sure they're not going to chop people's hands off if they do go over there.
At least no, not that would. No, they wouldn't. I think what I don't want to get into politics here, but I think it's about, as I say to people, it's about integration more than immigration, although it's a very high number. And obviously, when I was a kid, I was taught all the Britishness, British culture and stuff like that. I used to do pole dancing, not pole dancing in the sense of stripping, right? I'm talking about country dancing, okay? When I was a kid at school, loved it.
Did you go to the wrong lessons?
What fucking school was that? I never went.
Did Morris anyway, start?
Should we steer this back to the movie rather than Samir's strange, obscure charm?
Yeah.
Right. Samir's indoctrination to maypole dancing, whatever the fuck he was talking about.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Enjoyed it.
Right. Another point that I've got. I've mentioned about the characters. I just didn't feel any connection to them whatsoever. And I think the storylines are all kind of confused and messed up. One question I do have that either of you might be able to answer. Ian McShane's character, he gets a little bit of leave, doesn't he? And then goes back to London. I think he goes back to London to try and meet his wife and kids.
Yeah. I would love to.
So he meets them in the town hall because the bombing and all that has obliterated houses and whatnot, right? So there's a group, I can't remember what they're called now, the group, the wardens, going to the town hall and they ask for help, for volunteers to go help and sort of clear the rubble and try and rescue people from the rubble.
Yeah.
He goes and then he comes back and the town hall is completely obliterated.
Yeah.
He loses his family.
It's bombed.
Yeah.
So his family died in it.
Yes.
Well, that's what we assume, yeah, since the whole thing is literally a rubble.
That's why he goes to the officer's house in the country, you know, if you remember the next day.
Well, that's what I was going to ask about, because he wasn't really upset, was he?
No.
He didn't act like a man that was in mourning and completely devastated that his wife and two children had been killed.
It's a generation thing, stiff upper lip, get on with and war sort of thing.
Well, I think it's probably a little bit of post-traumatic sort of come to terms with it, possibly. I don't know. I guess because he wasn't there and didn't witness and didn't see them, maybe it wasn't quite so bad. I mean, if you saw him, you know, hanging over the town hall wall, it might have been a bit more traumatic. You know,
all right. Can you imagine if you went to work one day, Justin, and then you come home, right? From work, and your house had been completely blown up by a gas explosion, and your entire family had died. Would you just go?
I'll tell you what. Just off topic, but
let's
related.
Go back to work.
Right, off topic, but related. So I always thought, what would I do? Right, if like tomorrow there was a zombie apocalypse broke out, and you know the place was devastated, and it suddenly became in a day every man for himself. I think I would rather carry on my life not knowing or seeing what happened to my family then immediately trying to go and find my family to find them zombified or have to shoot them in the head, you know, or whatever the case may be. I don't know. I think psychologically you feel better never knowing what happened or seeing the outcome.
But they could be sat there going, when's daddy coming back to save us?
They could be. So let's hope we never have to make this decision. Sorry, kids.
You're on your own.
But then I haven't thought that. My mind hadn't been stimulated to that thought until just now for many years. So the kids were younger then. But, you know, I'd expect
them, they're fine. They can handle themselves. So don't worry, they'll be all right.
You'd be devastated. Of course you would, because it's your family. But I don't think there's any buts to that. I think people deal with grief in different ways.
Just walk it off. You're fine.
I think I'm going to go back to the realistic place where there's not going to be a zombie, whatever you say. But if I was in this position, I think it was a generation thing. Yes, you get upset and people didn't show their feelings. And that's why we had a problem for quite a long time in this country when people didn't show their feelings. There was a stiff upper lip. It was during the war. But if that happened to me personally, to my family, yes, I'll probably break down in front of the house and probably be on my knees.
I agree with you, but I think if he was on enemy territory, I think he would have got a baseball bat, put some barbed wire around, called it Lucille and turned it to Negan, I think. Yeah, for sure. Because and get your revenge. Persons. But what could you do? There's
crying, blubbing in front of the house.
And I think that's where, to me, you come in. That's where the stiff upper lip kicks in. You think, you know, right, back to duty, nothing I can do. Get up your plane and shoot down some cherries.
Tally ho, pit pit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, but I would actually, yep. And then I would get up and go, yep, that's it. Now I need to get my revenge. But in those days, it was a different generation, different attitude.
Still probably gave the desired motivation, though.
Of course it does. If the enemy kills your family, that means, oh, I'm going to go up, back in the air, get half a dozen of those. Doesn't matter if I die, but I'm going to get some.
And I think that's probably Paul's point with the Polish as well, not understanding language. Yeah, that's exactly what they wanted to do, wasn't it?
Poor old Fritz up there in his Messerschmitt 109. He didn't do it, did he? He wasn't in person. He did it. Old Fritz, he's just up there doing a job like everyone else.
Yeah,
taking
but then
it
again,
out on him. That's not fair, is it?
But then again, it's like any army or air force, isn't it? Like they're just taking orders. I mean, if you look at like the movie and how many German air force people were getting killed and Royal Air Force people, you think about it, hold on, these guys shouldn't really be killing each other. They should be saying, hold on guys, it's nothing to do with us, let us lend the plane, let's have afternoon tea together, have some cake, and then we'll fly back. And
that did happen in certain senses. There's lots of documentaries and films portraying that you know, where German mechanics working on these planes would what's the word for it, not load them with enough bullets, or what's the word I'm looking for? Sabotage.
Sabotage.
We sabotage the aircraft, you know, so they either failed or broke down, and etc. So there's lots of, you know, French resistance infiltrated, and
I'm surprised that you mentioned that, because my immediate reaction to that one was what happened in the early days of World War One, when it was Christmas, when we've got that fabled story of the English and the Germans meeting in no man's land and a game of football.
That's a Good Friday Agreement, wasn't it?
I don't know.
Good Friday Agreement? I'm sure it was.
That's Northern Ireland, isn't it? Good Friday Agreement?
Oh, I don't know. I don't mean that.
Yeah, well, I believe it was over a Christmas period.
It was.
You know? I think you're probably right. Yeah.
But the thing is, the point was, is that during the early 1900s, warfare was very different because you didn't have weapons of mass destruction. I mean, that's what we consider WMDs now is totally different to what it was then. But you know, they had rifles, single-shot rifles, and they would just go and stand in a line and take turns shooting each other. And it was all a very honourable, gentlemanly thing to do. And then the First World War happened, and it was trench warfare with machine gun fire, where they're just mowing down hundreds of people across muddy fields. And they're like, fuck,
it was just a Christmas truce.
This is different. This is different. So, but the attitudes were different then. A lot of people at that period of time in history were hesitant to kill one another. You know, if they come face to face to each other in trench warfare, they would be immediately trying to bayonet each other. They'd be stood there like having a bit of a standoff, like, oh shit, you know, what am I supposed to do? Because the humanity was still there. But by the Second World War, it was gloves are off. That's it.
Well, basically, there's a very interesting thing about the First World War. Now, it always actually brings a little bit of pride to me as well in humankind. It's when the Red Baron got killed. We gave him full honours, basically, when we did his funeral, before giving his body to the Germans. And that is some respect when you give your enemy the full military honours and the highest honours you can give. People had value for money and respect for your rank and stuff like that. Nowadays, we don't even know who we are fighting in certain cases. So that's not going to be, it's not going to be the same. And as you say, warfare has changed. Okay.
Massively. I mean, speaking of fighting, the end dog fighting scene in this, they removed all the sound effects. It was just music playing. It was like a montage. I was a bit disappointed by that, actually. I thought that kind of ruined it for me.
No. Yeah. I wish they had...
I think it was almost as if they were just trying to wrap the film up. It was almost like, crikey, it's been going for 2 hours. Better get on with it now. Yeah, we know the ending, so there's no point.
Well, it was a cost, actually, because they had 30 bombers from the Spanish Air Force who were going to get rid of them. They were actual German aircrafts with Spanish engines. Same with the German fighters. And the same thing happened with the Spitfires and the Hurricanes. They got them. So they had a lot of aircraft. There were over 150 to 200 aircraft altogether or something from different armies and navies and private collectors. They had Americans, four or five Americans come along who actually flew as well. The planes during the air scenes. So it was like it cost them about £12 million, which is a lot of money in those days. And it only made £13 million. So it just made a profit, they're saying. And it made more money afterwards via rents and coming on TV, etc. And that's why I think they wrapped it up, because it was a cost, simple cost of the movie.
It's probably worth mentioning, yeah, but now we're talking about details of the actual production, the movie production, is that Guy Hamilton directed this. He's directed a number of Bond movies, and it was financed by Harry Saltzman as well.
Yeah, that's right.
So the Bond connection raises its head yet again. Obviously, that thread flows through Samir. All the stuff he recommends has always got some sort of connection to Bond somehow or another.
Well, interesting. The Kurtz Jurgens, what year was... Was it
77.
So this was before his Bond appearance.
Yes.
So I wonder if that sort of influenced their sort of casting suggestions at that point.
I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah. Not only that, but at the time he was probably the biggest German star in Hollywood. And his history is really, really fascinating, because I read about him. He actually was put into labor camp because he was against the Nazis. And he escaped, and he went to Austria. And after that, he became an Austrian citizen and never went back to Germany.
Riveting.
Yeah. What I'm trying to say is there were certain Germans who morally didn't agree. You know, like when you're a kid, you've been told that... Great movie with Amazing Colin...
It's a MASH watch film.
Film.
Am I doing this to Samir when he's in mid-flow?
Yeah, just throw him off a little bit.
It's like throwing a ball of war at Kitten. Yeah. You just cannot ignore it. They've just got to go for it.
Yeah.
So basically, I mean, like, you know, when we were kids, we were taught that every German was a Nazi. Every person of the population, everyone was the enemy. Well, it's great to read some of these things in the background and realise it wasn't all of the nation. He was bad. It was like
I'm
not mentioning. I'm just mentioning it from the research I'm doing.
Were actually dedicated Nazi Party members. The rest of them were just doing a job. It was like just a German military, German army, the German Luftwaffe. They weren't dedicated loyalist Nazis, but everyone seems to think they were.
It's like the Desert Fox. He only took orders from Hitler and Co. because he basically believed he was a patriotic person, and he was loyal to the German army, and it was his job, and he loved the German army too much not to take orders. But he never believed in the Nazi fantasy of ruling the world, etc. And there's quite a few officers were the same. Goring was bitter with something happening. His mother, I think, had an affair with a Jewish lord, whatever, Baron, when he was a younger kid, and that was his godfather. Because his parents got divorced, he actually started blaming Jewish people, but he really had nothing against them before that. It was just because of the divorce, and then Hitler came along and just made him feel more inclined to what Hitler believed, and that's what happened. So there were people who were played on to believe in certain things more than they did before.
I can just hear keyboards just
going,
historians going, what the fuck is this guy on about? But anyway.
It's just because I've seen documentaries mentioning this, that's why I'm saying...
got a position of power and thought, at least I'm going to be safe.
Well, he was pretty pally with Hitler, wasn't he? He was there on the old beer hall putsch when they marched up the street and got shot at. I think he took a bullet in the leg as well, so he was dedicated to the core. Anyway, have we got anything else to say? I mean, we're going for 54 minutes, 55 minutes.
No, I'm all good.
All I'm going to say, this is a better movie than Top Gun.
I don't think that's comparing apples with apples. I think they're I think the only relevance between the two is their aeroplanes.
That's it.
I don't think you can compare even. I think it would almost be deemed as wrong to even try and compare these two films together.
Well, I think this was the foundation that built where Top Gear, basically.
I don't Top think that's Gear,
Top
either.
Gun, basically.
I don't think basically. That's true either.
No, I think just...
I think Vietnam would be more poignant to the creation of Top Gun than Second World War, Back to Britain.
It's just a coincidence. You know, it's just planes. It makes for a good action movie, doesn't it?
You know,
planes and flying about, shooting at things. No. Yeah. All right, should we score it then?
Yeah, go on then, Smith. Your pick, your choice, your score.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm gonna give it a 7.
Is that it?
You what? Hold on, fucking what? I'm freezing this movie, all bleeding weak, and you're giving it a 7?
No, I'm not gonna give it a 9 or 10 or anything like that. I was gonna give it an 8, but I think I'm gonna play the 7. There's a reason why. It's just I think it's good enough to watch. I really enjoy it. I think it depends on your age group as well if you enjoy it or not. The special effects, I think this time I found a little bit disappointing because obviously it's become 4K or whatever, HD, etc. But I really enjoyed that actually using real aircrafts and extra German actors and Polish, etc., etc. So that's why I'm giving it a 7. And I would recommend someone to watch it, but not in a HD. Watch it in its original form where you find some of the special effects not obvious.
Oh, I see what you're getting at. Right.
Yeah, okay.
All right. I want to use Gammon, but now I get it. Yeah.
And that's why I've given it a 7, because of that.
Okay. Wait, flip a coin or do you want to go first, Justin?
I'll give it an 8 for sure. It's depicting a very important true story. I think it was filmed extremely well. I think the cast was very good. I like the authenticity of it, everything Smear said. And it's a standalone film. I don't think it's a film... If you don't like World Wars and you don't have any interest in the history of it, then you wouldn't watch the film. If you are wanting to be slightly educated, then you'd watch it and you'd probably enjoy it. But I think it's one of those films where... Do you want to enjoy it? Because the truth of it is that it really happened and people did die and whether you... Yeah. It's not like watching Predator and you're thinking the special effects are brilliant and that's why I give it an 8.
Should I save you from yourself and jump in at this point and give you a score?
I have to say one thing, Justin. I think no one likes wars. I mean, it's just a movie. If you like
history, I can't get enough of
it. The historical element of it...
You can tell Paul.
I'm like this with Russia and Ukraine, and that twat Zelensky going, "Oh, look, they're firing missiles at us! Quick, everyone, nuclear war!" Yeah, I can't wait. Anyway, right. So I'm giving it a 6 because, it's not awful. There was elements about this film I quite liked. I like the fact they tried to stick with authentic German actors, Polish actors, etc. I like that. The fact it has, you know, it's part of our history, I suppose. You know, although I didn't ask to be born in England, I am English. This historical moment, I think where it falls down though is that none of the fucking characters actually mean shit. They just don't. They just nothing.
Well, there's no storytelling of the individual characters.
No, there's nothing. So I didn't feel connected in any way to any of the characters. I wouldn't rush to watch this film again, but it's the only film I can really think of that is purely about a subject matter rather than actually a story. So I would think that if anyone's interested in the Battle of Britain, you'd be better off watching a documentary on the History Channel or something than watching this film.
Yeah,
I don't really know what this film is trying to achieve. Because it's not really telling a story. And as you said earlier, Justin, we know the end. We know what happens.
Yeah.
So it's just like a spectacle for spectacle's sake.
It's like a docu-film.
Well, that's what it should have been, I suppose. But docu-films, they usually focus around a group of real-life people that had pivotal moments in that part of history. Whereas this film is just like a collection of people. I know some of them were based on real people. They're sort of thrown together, and you think of all the acting talent that's in this movie, and I feel that there was no acting.
You didn't feel invested in any particular actor or actress.
So 6 out of 10 for me. I would not be in a rush to watch it again. But it was all right.
Another thing that I have to add to this about the movie, Gorin's hair, that blonde, the way they dyed his hair, that was really bright. It was really, really bright blonde. I'm not sure even if he was blonde in real life.
I don't know.
I thought you would know, Justin.
Well, I assume he might have been to part of the Aryan whole thing. I don't know.
Well, being your grandfather and all, I thought, you know, you'd...
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. Justin Goring. No one knows. Yeah. Now we've revealed it live on air. It's Justin Goring.
I bet we'll get quite a lot of hate mail now. Get him off air.
Anyway, let's wrap it up there then. Yeah. Let's leave it there. Okay. So that's the Battle of Britain, 1969. Done. That's it. That's the definitive word on it. No more movie reviews after this. This is the definitive one on the Battle of Britain. So, thanks for watching and joining us. And thanks to the new subscribers. That's pretty cool. We're growing. I like that. It's quite good. I don't have much more to say. Like it on social media. Give us a like and subscribe if you enjoyed this. If you got this fucking far, the least thing you can do is hit the thumb up button. Don't even necessarily have to subscribe if you don't. Just hit the thumb up button, for Christ's sake. I mean, that costs nothing, does it? Just go and do it. Anyway, it's goodbye from me.
Tally ho.
I visited the zine.
Right.